Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 18th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books Government by Consent and Court Access and the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on a donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading. We're in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. I believe we're in chapter 2, actually. Let me correct this. Maybe that's correct. No, it's not. I believe we're in 2. Yeah. So 1 Corinthians, this is 2 Corinthians, hang on a minute, maybe I had it right in the first place. Okay, yep, this is 1 Corinthians chapter 2, I got it now. Okay, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 2. And I, brethren, when I came to you, came not with excellency of speech or of wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of God. For I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. And my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. Howbeit, we speak wisdom among them that are perfect, yet not the wisdom of this world, nor of the princes of this world that come to naught, but we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world unto our glory, which none of the princes of this world knew. For had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, Eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. But God hath revealed them unto us by his Spirit. For the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. For what man knoweth the things of a man, save the spirit of man which is in him? Even so, the things of God knoweth no man but the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God, which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teacheth, but which the Holy Ghost teacheth, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. But the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. But he that is spiritual judgeth all things, yet he himself is judged of no man. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ.
Okay, Ken, do we have any questions today or announcements?
Yes, we have a couple questions, John. The first one is...
And by the way, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue? Go ahead, Jen.
Chancery courts are banned in the U.S. except for abatement of nuisances. What does this actually mean? Can a man under common law be dragged into this foreign jurisdiction over a debate on nuisance?
Well, actually, we had that question last week, but we'll go through it just quickly again. You know, I think they have it confused with the nuisance concerning the abatement of nuisance. The abatement of nuisance was something that came up, let me think when that came up quite some time ago. I don't remember exactly when, but it was a actually a statute. And it's a statute that is accepted by common law. As a matter of fact, any statute that is lawful would be accepted by common law, but we don't live under statutes. But it gives us the ability to get rid of a nuisance. For instance, if you're in a court that's not even a court of record, like village courts, city courts, at least most city courts, and town courts, they usually are all about, well, they always are all about code violations. So that would be a nuisance, and we can get rid of that as a nuisance and through what's called a summary judgment. But summary judgment, and it's written about ultimately in American jurisprudence, you read about this a little bit, but it gives you the ability to get rid of the nuisance. Again, that's what the referral is. But as far as a chancery court is concerned, chancery courts are courts that come from England. They came into the colonies early on, the 1750, during the colonies in 1750, when the Bar Association was here, they were establishing these chancery courts. And they spread out west quite a bit as time went on. And but chancery courts, the Constitution banned chancery courts. We only have two courts, and that would be, well, under two laws, equity and law. And equity would be positive law, law written for the purpose of controlling commercial activities, controlling the government agencies and the agents therein, and so on. And that's what an equity court is. They're governed by statutes. But there still, nevertheless, has to be what's called under positive law, and they run under the rules of common law. So they have to be in harmony with common law. So anything that is not in harmony with common law will be null and void. Now, a court of law... is a law, is the law that's in view there, is common law, natural law. And so those are the only two types of law or courts that can be open. Now, there are other types of courts for different things that are outside the law of the sea and dealing with other situations that are outside the boundaries of the land here. But chancery courts are unlawful courts. There's still a lot of them in America. As a matter of fact, I believe, I think it's Pennsylvania that calls a lot of the different courts chancery courts. They'll refer to the judge as a chancellor. And there are other states that also still fall under this, and that's unlawful. It's unconstitutional. All those courts are null and void. If you're pulled into those courts, ultimately you can move for a summary judgment to dispose of that court as a nuisance. Because, again, it's a court that doesn't apply to we the people here in the United States. So that's pretty much, I guess, what that's all about. Anyway, another question?
Yes, there's one more. Well, it's really a comment. I know that John is always looking for an opportunity to be interviewed. A great place that receives a lot of attention is Red Pill 78 News. I'll provide the link below. Zach, the host, has had many well-known and notorious people on his show. He has both Friday and Saturday night live streams, which span about 2 hours or more in length. This is where he and his guests ask his guests on for interviews and call-in questions. Now, I don't know if you want to be included with the notorious people or not, John, but it's an opportunity.
Well, absolutely. I'll talk to anyone. You know, have we not been on Red Pill before? That sounds familiar. Maybe it's, I don't know, it's just got a familiar sound to it.
Well, yeah, about 3 years ago we had one set up with one of the guys that's on the Red Pill a lot.
Do you have the information? Might be able to contact and see if we can get on. You know, it's extremely important that I get out there to interviews to get to people in order to get to the critical mass that we're really seeking to get. You know, we have to get to the populace. And if we can get on a couple of big podcasts or whatever kind of programs they may call it, that should open up the doors to get us calls on lots of different, venues or programs or podcasts or whatever you want to call them, to get the word out. And again, it's extremely important that we do that. So if anybody can make any connection with anybody that might be interested in interviewing us here at National Liberty Alliance, you know, I'd welcome that and work something out. You can maybe try to make contact and get that information to Jan, or get the contact information and get that information to Jan, and Jan will see if he can't set up an appointment for me to have be interviewed. So, okay, anything else, Jan? Any announcements?
No, that's the last one, John.
Okay. All right, again, we've got our Q&A is open. If anybody wants to get in, we only have one person in there. Just one other thing, you know, we started our Bible study last week, last Thursday. It starts at 7:30. We're going to be doing it every Thursday. This coming Thursday, anybody interested, they can join us in our Bible study. It'll be right here in this room at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And there is a page under education starts here. You can get some information on the Bible study here. And you can also view or listen to the last week's Bible study. Okay, that's it. I guess we'll take our one and only question at this point in time. Let's see. Again, anybody wants to get into the queue, please do so. Okay, let's see. We got a wireless caller. You got the mic, 719, first name and state.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes, my name's Mike. I was with you back maybe 5 or 6 years here in Cornelius County, Colorado. You still help people with social services, dependency and neglect cases?
Yeah, we don't get directly involved in cases. We were doing habeas corpuses, and we were doing a few other different kinds of cases, usually foreclosures. But we don't really have the manpower to continue on that at this point in time. But we definitely don't get involved in specific cases, we'd have to really learn about the case, and, you know, we're not a group of lawyers or anything like that.
Okay, so it's just criminal cases, huh?
Excuse me?
Criminal cases is the only thing you take.
Well, we don't take any cases. Our purpose is to reinstate the Republic. And so, like I said, we were building evidence up for quite a few years where we were people were in home foreclosures, for instance. We pre-wrote some basic papers for different kind of situations, and we were able to, you know, just file a lot of papers that way, and, you know, because they were pretty much written. It was and it did the same thing with habeas corpuses. And we haven't had a lot of success in that because the courts are evil. They're totally taken over. And we did file a case. Well, we filed numerous papers on this and also on different subversions by judges. We did a lot of indictments, particularly on judges, federal judges and state judges. We may have taken on a few cases that were very, you know, minor cases, usually, you know, cases where someone caught up in a court that is, you know, like a village court or something like that. But we really don't get involved too much more with that either.
Okay. If we have a judge, do we call Jan?
If we what?
Well, one judge for indictment.
Yeah, I don't understand. I didn't get the question. Start all over.
If we wanted to go after a district judge, what would be the first step?
And when you say district, are you talking state level or federal level?
State
level. Yeah, if you want, you know, it's very difficult at this point in time. They've tightened up pretty good. They take care of their own. They throw you out of court. A lot of that, really, you could build a case on this side and then pick it back up on the other side of devolution. Because you're not going to have much success on this side of devolution. Are you familiar with devolution?
No.
Well, that's the plan for the military to come and take control and bring this country back to the people and reestablish the Republic. And we have some information on that if you're interested. It should be under today's issues. And if you go under today's issues, I know you're coming in on a phone, so I guess you can't see us, but if you come in on an app, you'd see the desktop I'm looking at. But if you come under today's issues, you can come down a few bars down and you'll see devolution. You can click on that. You can also see Q News and On, which I haven't been updating. I should try to get some time to update that. Hey, Terry, do you think you have the time to update that page? Because we're missing a lot of the videos that were put up there by SQ Anon.
I will take a look.
We're about 10 behind, so there's quite a few. I just been so busy, I kind of forgot all about it.
You mean SG Anon?
SG Anon, yeah.
Okay.
SQ Anon. Yeah, and there's a couple of really good interviews that he done, and I would put them up too. I don't know that I'd put all the interviews. I'll let you figure out which one you think might be good. But, you know, he's had a few interviews that I think weren't all that great. But he's had a lot of great interviews too. So, okay.
Okay.
Right, anyway, back to who was I talking to? Mike there. So you can get that information under that tab, today's issues. Come down to, like I said, you can come down to devolution in the Q News Anon, which is SQ Anon.
Did you say the indicted judges?
Excuse me? Say that again, Mike.
Never mind. I'm done.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, again, anybody wants to get into the queue? We only got a couple of people in there. We'll take our next person. Ross, you got the mic.
Yeah, no experience. Hey, John, you remember when you said something about you have problems with the cases and you felt like you were a slave? I think it's the status. Most people are under the jurisdiction status as U.S. citizens. The government thinks as a U.S. citizen, you are under jurisdiction. That's why they don't want to listen to your cases you submit to the Supreme Court.
Well, yeah, you have a point there to a degree. Remember, U.S. Constitution used the word citizen in its 7th line.
I know. I just
we shouldn't shy away from that. And it is true that we are under the subject or under the jurisdiction. That doesn't mean we're under subject. We just under the jurisdiction.
So the government employees think we are under the control. That's why they think if you're a U.S. citizen, we are under their control.
Well, again, they play word games.
Yes, that's what it is. It's the attorneys.
You do have the Organic Act of 1871, which really created the U.S. And that point forward, they change meanings and words, and they try to get rid of it. But this is actually his laptop. The Supreme Court rulings and so on and so forth. But it's all subversion. It's all unlawful, and all of these people eventually will end up in jail or under the end of the short rope.
Is a state national a subversion too?
State national is not a solution. I know people are teaching that there's no reason to do any of those things. So, state national or nationalist, it doesn't make any sense. You're just exercising the things that are worthless. It doesn't give you any more clout, doesn't give you any more status, it doesn't give you any more standing, it doesn't put you in a different jurisdiction. As a matter of fact, it could be a little dangerous. U.S. citizens, really, were born in the citizen law state, but the particular state we live in, and the state we're in, we have all the rights of the state, being one state to another state, any state, so it doesn't matter. But the dangers could be, if they wanted to, give up the citizenship, a lot of people have done that. They're in very precarious situations, because they could be deported. If they wanted to, they could deport them. There's not much we could do about it, because they're not a citizen of the country. So that's a problem. I would not mess around. And again, being a citizen, they have one idea of what it might mean, but the true meaning is what we will hold on to.
Yeah, how people can be a non-statutory citizen?
Well, all of us who are the people of the United States, we're all non-statutory citizens. We can't be held under statutes. We're held only under law. That's the only thing that we're held under or responsible under law. Now, statutes, again, are for people who are citizens also, but they are citizens that are working in certain activities, commercial activities, or working for a government agency. Then they have to operate under those statutes, under those rules and regulations. But we don't.
Why does the attorneys that work for the government apply those to us, anyways?
Because they're evil and they want to maintain control and they're trying to turn us into slaves. They've done a pretty darn good job of us. They've kept us ignorant as slaves. People don't know the Constitution. They were never taught that. I see people in college. I know there's a lot of people who do like interviews with people outside of colleges and ask them questions. They don't even know what the Revolutionary War was. They don't know what difference between that and the Civil War. They don't know who the president is. They don't know who the first president was. I mean, real questions that are unbelievable. You got to keep the slaves ignorant, and so that's what they've done to us. We're slaves. Been enslaved, and they're keeping us very ignorant. We don't know the Constitution, as I said. We don't know the law. We don't know the difference between law and equity. We don't know how to have government by consent. You know, we think that they can debate and argue over our Bill of Rights, which are natural rights given to us by God, not by man. Man can't take that away. The natural rights. So again, all these things are the problem. And the solution is an education. And people don't apply and step it up and taking it back on the grassroots struggle by building committees to safety, establishing control over our courts and over our schools. And over the people who we've elected for different positions, whether it be county, village, or state, whatever. We've got to bring them back on the subject. And again, if people are uneducated, they don't know how to do that. If they don't know the Constitution, they can't even tell whether they're violating the Constitution. And a lot of people that are in power are just as ignorant as we, the people. You know, after all, they think most of them, very close to all of them anyway, believe we're a democracy. We're far from a democracy.
Why is our attorneys think we are under maritime law?
Well, again, you're using words that they wouldn't use. We're under statutes, they claim. They wouldn't claim us under maritime law, although I know a lot of people who argue the point will make that statement to the maritime law, which is the law of the sea. But they've gone far from that. And why?
Yeah.
The lawyers, particularly, and attorney generals, judges, all these people, lawyers particularly, are bar attorneys particularly. And you don't get a place of power in the court system at all as an attorney general or any of those, because this is the question of bar attorney. If you're not you could be an attorney, you know, you could be a lawyer, but not a bar attorney, which wasn't to them. We begin to learn under the Bar Association. But they have taught these people things. Remember, when these people come in to college to learn law, they're still kids. They're 18, 19 years old. They still, you know, haven't figured things out. They haven't had any real good lessons of life. So they're still trying to figure things out. They go in as true believers. So when they go through that process and they are taught all these different things, unlawful, that's not true, they believe that we're under Roman law. They believe that America was created like under Rome, which of course is not the case. We're under natural law, and we're created under the system of Israel. That's who we are as a people. But they're taught exactly the
same. Yeah, if it means a lot of sea has two jurisdictions like Admiralty and Maritime, it's just the same thing as a lot of the sea.
Well, Admiralty law and maritime law is very close to the same, pretty much. One's military, it's at sea, it's law of the sea. And the other one is the law of nations, which again is law of the sea also. Not the law of the land. Remember, those two things cannot be applied. Neither can any commercial control cannot be applied to the people. Control over the agencies, held over to the people.
Yes.
And they are, because people are ignorant, and slaves are ignorant in order to control them, and they've been controlling us very well.
See, I think a lot of people say they are on the private side of the law, so they are not. They are on the public law.
Well, look, if people say all kinds of things, you get them into court, you know, it's not like you're going to go out and put up a declaration in your county and make a statement that you're going to go and get rid of your or a state mask, and then you're going to get stuck in a court and say, hey, this doesn't apply to us. And they think they're going to flip their heels and all of a sudden be transporting into a court of law. And I have a bridge to Brooklyn, so not as a matter of fact, you're more apt to be beaten up even worse in a court. And also they think in nuts, and they, you know, remember, they have a different mindset. And the general public, they're lost also. So
the timing where you and yeah.
You're breaking up, John.
All right, well, hopefully it'll get better. Am I breaking up to everybody else or just Ross?
And I guess what I came away with is, and I'm not...
You were a little faint for a bit, but I can hear you fine now.
All right, yeah, I might have had my face facing away from the mic, but I'm facing back onto the mic.
John, I've been to this website called freedomriver.wordpress.com.
What's it called?
It's freedomriver.wordpress.com.
Freedom, what was the second word? Freedom what?
River.
River?
Yes.
Freedom River.
.wordpress.com.
Okay.
And? No, that's it. .com.
Oh, goodness, I missed it. Just see.
They were telling you don't stay there because they knew so much.
Okay, what about that? Well, it's not even coming up, but we'll try. Freedom River. Well, what is it about? What does it say? What are you asking about it?
Oh, because they mentioned, like, the book registration and not about certificate. If you register your birth certificate to the government, it's not considered a your own. You don't own your own name. Is you have to record your name onto the government's records, not register on a government record.
Look at the points they're making on these websites are correct. Okay, the solution that they offer is incorrect. Okay. If you're going to battle this out in the court, you battle it out and what it's all about. It's all about fraud. It's unlawful for what they're doing. Stay focused on the law and stay focused on the fraud that they're committing, and that's where the battle is. But if you start to go down the list, well, the birth certificate, Social Security, I got to get rid of voting. I got to get a paper. I make a declaration of who I am. I'm one of the people, you know, and so on and so forth. All of that is. It's only going to get you in more trouble, if anything, but you're only wasting your time. You're beating the air, is what you're doing. You're not getting.
You think people should authenticate their birth certificates or not?
Say that again?
Should we authenticate our birth certificates or not?
What about birth certificates? If you ask me about birth certificates, what about it?
About authentication of your birth certificate.
Authenticating it?
Yes.
Well, look, it. You know, birth certificates, again, is something that they came up with to control the people. Again, if they
to
the point of cattle, so we're kind of like livestock, we're being sold, we were born with a certain value, if you give us what's called, if there was a deal made back then when all this happened, and again, you know, we have a certain value, and that's we have escrow accounts, which we can apply towards ourselves, and you're never able to do that because they put you in jail if you try to do that. I know somebody who has done that, and not many days later, it's opening his door, and he's been on a run ever since. He happened not to be one of the time. You're not going to get anywhere. It's just going to get you in more trouble. Look, if you want to fight them, fighting them is tough, too. And we've been fighting them for a long time. Our fighting, we kind of know we're probably not going to get anywhere. We get a case of wind. It does happen, but it's rare. But really, it's all about building a case. That's what it's all about.
Mikey, shouldn't you even fill out affidavit of birth?
What about the affidavit of birth?
That's instead of the birth certificate is a statement of your birth.
Well, that's a good question. You know, while I'm talking, maybe you can mute your mic because you get a lot of background noise, and then you can unmute. But, look, That's a good question. I don't know that I have an answer to that. You know, we've become a very complex society, economically speaking. And, you know, we do have to know who people are when we do business with them and so on and so forth. So what do? You know, prior to this process with the birth certificate, when the economy didn't have the complexity that it has now, you know, the banking system was quite different. We're on silver and gold, and there was no debit cards or credit cards. They didn't have any of those things and a lot of other things going on. You know, when you were born, generally speaking, we're a Christian nation. So when we were born, generally speaking, you know, they would put the name, the family tree into the family Bible, and that would be passed down. So that was one of the ways. Now, I'm not aware that there was any other kind of recording that took place. And maybe there was, but I don't know. I think once we get on to the other side, maybe we need to discuss that problem or that situation. Do we want to continue with birth certificates? Does that make sense? You know, on one hand, it does make sense. On another hand, it becomes dangerous. Same thing with a Social Security card. You know, on the one hand, it makes kind of sense. On the other hand, it's dangerous. The thing is, none of these things would be a problem or a concern if the people were active, if the people actually knew how to have government by consent and exercise that right of government by consent. And we're talking, and remember, you know, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. So it's not like we need a lot of people to do this, but we need maybe 100 people in every county, and that'll grow quite quickly anyway once people understand what's going on and see the success that we can have and the control over our government. But unless the people take control of their government, you know, we're going to continue to go down this same road. But until you take over back control of the government, birth certificates, absolutely, and Social Security cards, numbers, absolutely, are very dangerous to the people because it's a way of control, a way to gather information, and of course, with today's technology, you know, it's even worse. And by the way, there's nobody in the queue other than Ross, so anybody else wants to get in there?
John? I think so the birth certificate and the Social Security card with the numbers, It should be the information for government agents of the government should have that. We should know the information more than they should know about us.
Well, first of all, the government shouldn't be using the information the way they're using it. That's the problem. And if you have a government that is an evil government, an unlawful government, they're going to use these things to their own benefit in order to control them. In order to get rid of that, the only way you can get rid of that and continue with this kind of a system is to have government by consent, where the people control the people that are in power. And when someone is abusing that power, you can remove them from office. That's the power and the authority of the people. There's numerous ways to do that. But that's not what's going on, so it is dangerous. Is there another system that we can bring together for this purpose? No, again, that's something that I think people have to talk about and maybe get some debates and ideas and to see what we need to do to prevent this problem.
Okay.
I don't have a solution for that, so...
Okay, I'm done.
But I'm looking on this website. This website is teaching you these things? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm trying to remember how you get to that page. They talk about sovereignty and that. It does have Evan Ritz's name on the website, too.
I didn't get that. Say that again?
I think it was a private and public person where you get that information.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. Look at.
I can send it to a link to you directly to that.
I'm not really interested because it doesn't really harmonize with what we're doing here, you know, and people teach a lot of crazy things on the internet, and some of it's not real good. Look, you have places that teach this thing about the sovereign movement, And what they talk to you about is true to a degree. You know, we became an Inc. in 1871. That's absolutely true. There's a CESU account, and there's a control system set up with the Social Security cards by numbering the people, and there's also a control with the birth certificates, and they use that for a certificate of ownership. It's like having an animal and having papers on the animal. Just like an animal, ultimately. So we're like livestock. But, the solution, is the problem. The solution is wrong and dangerous. That's what I can tell you. And I first started learning under those things, but I had too many questions as I was going through the system trying to understand, and some of these questions some of these people couldn't answer, and I just started doing my own research, and that's to a lot of how National Liberty Alliance really developed, to a degree that was one of the things that caused the developing of National Liberty Alliance to deal with that problem.
John?
Yeah.
I also have founding fathers probably put into as a process they put in is the land patent process.
Well, again, that's another thing and by the way, you know, that land patent process, because of tax on property, that was a connection to England, and Trump had done away with that when he was in office, when he went to visit the Queen. I don't know if people are familiar with that, and he served notice that we're no longer in that thing. And they are still collecting money and doing different things like that, but one day that's going to stop. People don't have to go to do a land patent thing to try to change their land to private or something like that. That's going to take care of itself soon. As soon as we get on the other side of the revolution, that's a problem that will be corrected.
Means we also should get rid of the Bureau of Land Management.
Which management?
The Bureau of Land Management.
Well, first of all, I'm not aware of any place in the Constitution that gave them the authority to create such a thing. Maybe there is something in there. But what land management would the federal government want to control? I would think that would be something really on a state level and not on a federal level. So the liberties, the newfound powers, really either go to the people of the states. And now the states, for instance, we have all these federal lands out there, which is really what they're controlling. Well, this belongs to the state that land is in. And those people should be the ones benefiting from the income of managing that land, because there's income on the land.
You mean the state land department?
Well, again, that would be lawful to some degree. Again, it depends on the constitution within that state, but it makes sense. If you have to control something like a state park, you know, we have federal parks, which really should be state parks, and the state government for that purpose. So, and most states already have some kind of a state manager for the land.
Do you think we shouldn't even have land granted to us?
What do you mean land granted to us?
It's like when Congress granted land for railroads, homesteading, and that.
Well, the Homesteading Act is still in play. There are the problem is the federal government has really tried to seize all that land up, so there's nobody can put a stake down to grab land. But I'm sure there are certain places that's still available, and you can put down a stake and take it under the Homestead Act. So that's one thing. Now, the other thing you mentioned, what was the other thing?
Railroad.
Right.
Grant.
Right. Well, look, in order to build that railroad, they had to go through people's property. And there is a provision for that. People need to be, taken care of for that, for the loss of the land that they would give up for that property, you know, for that purpose. So there are situations where the state does have the power and the authority, but they have to be reasonable, and and they have to compensate properly the people whose land that they're trying to seize in order to build something. I mean, look at the highways are the same way, building highways. You know, that whole movement that took place, I think, in the 40s and 50s, if I recall. And roads, highways going from one end of the nation to the other, a couple of them, and others going from north to south. So all of that is necessary for the people.
Like another one was a pacer patent, a mining patent, is another version of a patent.
Did you say 911?
No. Pacer patent means placing the mind on patented land.
Is he talking about being able to mine things out of the land on
yes.
federal property? Well, that should be available. It is available. They try to block people from doing that. It's like foresting. You know, like lumber companies would take land and they take the trees off the land to purchase lumber to be able to sell to the people, and you know they would go to the government and maybe they have to bid against it if there are other people wanting to try to get that piece of land to do that kind of thing. But they, you know, properly done, you know, you take trees down, you got to plant trees, so that would be, and that is part of the requirement. It sounds logical, but it should be anyway. And so for logging purposes, I mean, quite some time ago, they stopped a lot of logging here in the United States. I don't know if it's still being stopped or we haven't done any logging here, but, a lot of our lumber was coming from Canada. And I don't know how much might be coming from the United States, but trying to stop a lot.
Another website I go to is called the landpatents.com. You don't really purchase land patents through them. You have to go to the local office, and that's over the county you live in.
Well, land patents, I don't know. What do you mean when you say land patents? Are you talking about taking a piece of land and, you know, what are you thinking when you say that?
Okay, it's like if you want to buy land for, like, have Mehud National Forest Land Exchange, you can buy a piece of land for from the federal government. Means they give you grant of rights over the thing, and once they give you those patents, you have all the rights over that land. The government doesn't have any rights anymore over the land after they grant it to you.
All right, again, a lot of people try to get that thing going that they own a piece of land and they want to get their proper control over that land, and they want to do what's called a land patent thing. I never followed up on it. I know that we have a book up there on how to do that, but I don't know that I would suggest for people to do it, because we're going to go back to ownership on its own. You know, whatever land you have, it'll be yours once we get to the other side of things. That's the proper way things should have been done. So they've been turning that control of land over to making it as if you're leasing it, and that's where the tax comes in. That's why you say land tax. Now, when you say land patent, again, there are other things that you might be talking about, and I'm not too sure what that might be.
See, land patents are part of actually common law. It's not always about statutory law.
I don't know that that's true or not. I know that, you know, you put a stake in a land, you stake out the land and you seize it, for instance, under the Homestead Act. Again, I don't know that there's much of that going on anymore, because the federal government has seized a lot of this open land and they've taken control of it. But even though they've done that, unless it's declared a park, it's made, And again, I don't know what's been declared a fox or hasn't. So
it can I? Can I introduce something here, John?
Yeah, please go ahead.
From my workings with Robert Overhill, this is the big thing about Robert Overhill. He researched back to in his place in Michigan, and the patent came from America, saying, "Okay, Michigan, you have a patent for this land." And then they would sell the land to different buyers or grant land to different people who are going to produce on it. And so if you can trace your property back to that original patent, then there's no question you own that land. If you can't, what happens is that they take somebody's land or they do whatever, and I'm not real versed on it, and they actually remove it from this idea that you have a land patent. This land was patented here. The land patent was, smaller land patent was issued by the state of Michigan to Robert Overhill's property, and then it goes down from there. And he could trace it back to when that land patent was. And because of that, he could prove that he owned the land. And I think that might be the direction Russ is going, and I yield.
Yeah, that's where I was going, is what the Supreme Court said about land patents is a proof of the highest ownership of the land.
Well, yeah, that would be true, but here's the thing, okay? The whole thing is set up on a fraud. When you buy a piece of property, that property has to be, you know, you have to have someone go out there and they have to lay out the corners of the property with the boundaries that they survey. And so the property needs to be surveyed. And then, of course, there has to be someone that has owned that land prior that's selling it, of course. If you're buying a piece of land, usually a developer might buy a piece of land. And again, they have this whole thing all surveyed when they get it. And then when they subdivide it, they survey each one of these parcels and so on and so forth. That is sufficient, in my opinion. There's no reason to go anything further than that. Now, if someone, you know, again, if you take on a... I was involved with... Well, I used to do subdivisions. I used to be involved with the developers who do subdivisions and participated in the process. And there was one situation where the developer had bought a piece of land, but there was a parcel of land attached into that land, and they had a fence around their land, okay? And when they went to do all the surveying, they found that the fence was too far into their land, into the person who was buying, you know, the development. And I have to mute you when I'm talking because there's too much noise, so hang on a second. I'll unmute you when I'm done. So what happened was they were trying to tell the guy, hey, you got to push your fence back about 20 or 30 feet or whatever it was. And the guy refused to do it, and they went to court. Now, because the guy was there for so many years, and I forget how many years it was, and that fence was up there and maybe rebuilt before or whatever, but the fence had been there for a long time, you know, fencing around the property. And so he won the fact that he had been there for a certain period of time. That was it, that land belonged to him. And so they, you know, the developer lost a little piece of the land. It wasn't a big deal because it was a pretty big parcel. And he created large parcels out of that. I think it was a 24-unit subdivision on that particular piece of property. So, again, you know, when you go back trying to discover, if you're going to go back to try to discover original purchases, I don't know that that's all necessary. But the bottom line is once you purchase that property and you have that, you know, the boundaries already laid up, it's all been surveyed and certified and they got all that information, and it's on a tax map, which should no longer be called a tax map. But anyway, it's on a map on the that the counties keep. Each county keeps a copy of all of the land. So every piece of property within the county is accounted for. And so to go any further than that in order to make a piece of property, yours, so you wouldn't have to pay tax and that you personally own its personal property and so on and so forth, I think is a waste of time. You can take a different avenue on this. You can go and make the battle to turn your property to be put into the books as private property instead of whatever category that they're giving it. So usually it's like residential or commercial, and they categorize properties in different, they have numbers for each categorization. I know that's pretty well unified within the state. I don't know if each state does it the same way with the same numbers and so on and so forth. But in any event, once it's called residential, it's taxable. If you can battle them and change it to private, it's no longer taxable. So that's another way to do it. But they're not going to obey the law anyway. No matter what you do, we're just wasting our time to a degree unless you have a plan. You know, our plan here at National Liberty Alliance, being in court, is building a case. That's what it's all about. Matter of fact, I might talk a little bit about that today, tonight, but we'll see. I don't know. I personally think it's a waste of time. If people want to do it, though, then they can do it. But back to you, Ross.
Okay. Any more? I done.
Okay. Thank you much, Ross. We do have one in the queue, so we'll take our next call. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? Star 601 if you're on the phone, and if you're on the app, if you're a button, get into the queue. Okay, Martha, you got the mic. What state are you from? That's the name that's showing up is Martha, anyway.
Okay, how do I speak? Oh, man. Okay.
We got you. We can hear you.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Oh, great. Thank you. Hi. I'm new to National Liberty Alliance. I just joined up with you guys and really enjoying checking out the website and everything. And I've noticed the and discovered the jury administrator information, and that really interested me. I've always had an interest in the law and justice, but I also was, I never wanted to get involved because I was aware of, you know, that they were, you pledge yourself to be under the British Royal, your accredited registry. So when I came across this information, I was like, wow, you know, this is some way I could help, and this is some way I could be involved in the law and feel good about it, in the natural law. But going through the information and seeing the jury administrator's position, it said, oh, you know, once you learn all this information and you study all these things, then you could have a jury administrator's position. It's about $64,000, something like that. And my question is, I'm still ignorant. I still haven't studied everything. So, you know, maybe I just need to read a whole bunch more. But since I'm here, I thought maybe I'll just ask the question. Where would that position be offered, and is that something that's offered now currently, or is that once the republic is restored kind of situation where that is where you could work as a jury administrator once we have the common law restored?
Right.
That's my question.
Okay. You know, right now is the time to learn and to become qualified to be a jury administrator. Right now, anybody as a person to a degree, okay, couldn't be qualified as good as anybody else that's taking on these juries and orientating them and so on, because right now it's bar attorneys that do that.
Right.
And, so what we're doing is we're building administrations, administrations in every single county. So we need four administrators and one paralegal. And a paralegal would be administrator also, but their main purpose would be for the purpose of writing papers and dealing with the paperwork, particularly for an indictment or something of that nature. And which is pretty simple, so that they can teach them. But they also already know the structure of the court. Now, we're teaching the structure of the court, and anybody who wants to be a jury administrator needs to take all of our courses. And when the time comes that you can take on that position, even though you wouldn't be finished with your education, some people might, but most people wouldn't be, you can be working and learning as on the job, so to speak, and learning as you go. We're putting a handbook together. I pretty much have a lot of information for it already, but I just haven't had the time to put it together. But I will be putting it together before we need it, at least. And that handbook will really lay out the different processes, what the people have to do as a jury administrator and certain criteria, and also how to write for an indictment and things of that nature. So it really, kind of give you a lot of information on the job. It's a handbook on how things work. And but you still need an education. And we have numerous courses on our website. It looks like you're coming in. I guess you're coming in on a computer. Are you seeing the...
I see them all. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on the desktop, for instance, education starts here. You come down to courses, and you'd want to take all these courses.
Right.
And you also want to take the most important course, which is the last course we did. It was Court Access in the Common Law. And in that... we teach people, how the court system works, how to write papers, what the procedure of the court is, what due process is, and information, a lot of stuff. I mean, it's a pretty in-depth course. It's a course that would be, I think it's equal to any other lawyer's course, except for that we're focusing in on the common law, not on civil law. And so that's what this course is all about. And anybody who is going to be an administrator eventually has to take this course. So they have to be in the process of taking these courses. And once they get in, we're going to require them to continue at a certain pace because they need to get through the course. So, but right now is the time to take these courses, to have the knowledge. We teach how to have government by consent. We teach people how to have, we teach people about civics, constitution. We teach about the militia, and then we have a jury administrator's accredited course. Most of the courses are free. In order to get into the government by consent course and the jury administrator accredited course, we ask people to be premier members, and a premier member is someone giving $5 a month or more. So that's a cup of coffee and a donut once a week, once a month. So people. That most people should be able to afford that. And the other course that we do give, which is the Court Access and the Common Law course, those are all recorded videos that we've done. We've done this live, and we recorded all of our live programming. We've got quite a bit. I mean, it's a large course. I think it's over 90 hours. And again, you get everything you need. This is enough if you really buckle down and really work through it and all of the information in here. You easily be able to go in and write your own cases and file your own papers and go through the whole process and know how discovery works and how to move to court, all the things necessary. So now that course there, we charge $125 for. We put that course together really to try to get some money in order to do more things than what we're doing. $5 a month, even that is just not enough to run things. But we have other ways we're pulling in some money. We're looking for funding, and once we get some funding, some really big funding, then we'll go professional, and that would really change things, and we'd be able to really push things forward a lot quicker. But anyway, as far as administrator, becoming a jury administrator, the job ultimately is orientating the jury. Once they're called and they're collected together in the courtroom, you'd be working in the court system. We would take over that process that they're using where the jury meets to deliberate or to decide on an indictment or whatever the case may be. We would take control of those places and we would orientate the juries. So that would be part of the job. And we have orientation is really all laid out. If you come in to start a committee of safety, you go to handbooks, videos, and tools, for instance, you click on that, and you'll come down and you'll see there's a grand jury handbook, okay? Mm-hmm. And this is what we would orientate them with. Now, we've got some videos. I think I did videos on this, and if I haven't, we'll be doing videos on this. And this will lay out through videos, maybe 45 minutes at a time. We'll discuss another 45 minutes and so on to go through this whole process to teach the people on common law and how things work and what their job is and what's required of them and who we are as a people and so on and so forth. Now, we have the same thing. Now, that's with the grand jury handbook. We also have a regular jurist, a petit jurist handbook, and that, again, is the same. So these two booklets, we would give a copy of them to all the jurists, and we would have video presentations, and we could also do this in PowerPoint. It'll be PowerPoint video presentations anyway. So after each one of these videos, which would be collectively the book, which could be done in a day, because you get 8 hours to orientate the jury, which now we're going to make them fully informed jurists, and that's the key, to understand the common law and how things work and not be duped by the judge or by lawyers, you know. So that's one of the key things, is orientating them. And the other thing is assisting in the writing of an indictment for a grand jury, and also being available to do some investigations. Jury administrators could become an investigative body for the grand jury. Definitely will be opening ways up if the jury, you know, we need to teach the grand jury, for instance, they have the power to investigate if something extends beyond what's being put before them, and they want to investigate and look deeper. They want to go over and see what's going on in this particular government office there or whatever the case may be. You know, and we would pave the way for them, make the phone calls, make the appointment, and let the jury go over there to get the information. Really to the point of even looking into their computers and everything to see what's going on, because this is the people's business, and we have a right to see what's going on. And right now you can't do those things, but that's what needs to be done. And when you have government that fears the people, that's when we have liberty. Until then, now we have the people fear the government, and we have tyranny, and that's where we're at. You know, we got to get to the other side. And we teach people how to have government by consent and maintain control over these individuals. So that's the basic things for that that job. So there would be four people in every county plus one, so it would be five, really. One would be a paralegal. At some point, we may not even need a paralegal, because really, once you get educated in the education we have, that's pretty much it. But again, we would need somebody not only... We'd have to have at least one person that can write papers. That's the key. But now, how do we get in there and what's going on? We can't get in there until after devolution. But we need to be preparing for this now. Okay? And there's been quite a few people that have signed up at this point. I don't know that they're all active. We need to be starting to push these people to see where they're at with their education at this point in time. But for instance, here, if you look down here on our page, we have 1,259 people who have signed up as jury administrators. And I'm sure not all those people are active. A lot of people sign up for all kinds of things and then they just fall asleep or whatever happens, I don't know. But this is important stuff. They shouldn't be falling asleep here. And one day we'll kind of clean things up to push out all the dead lumber, so to speak, the dead wood. But we need a total of, we have 3,000 plus counties, 3,000 counties, and we need five people in each one, so we need 15,000 people across the nation. Now, it becomes a job. It's a full-time job, 40 hours a week, Monday through Friday. It has benefits. The money would come from the county through the controller. Right now, the controller has a there's budgets for the jury administrators right now. That go through the controller. We would be taking that over and moving it to the people and disconnect the individuals from being part of the Bar Association or part of the government, because we're the people. The people need to control the courts. That's the way common law works. We need to bring it back to that point, and that's what we're pushing to do. So now once we do that again, if you don't have to work in the county you live in. I'll give you an example. Well, I live in Dutchess County, and the county courthouse is right there in Poughkeepsie. And in Poughkeepsie is a bridge. So if a person, and that goes over to Ulster County. If someone lived in Ulster County and they wanted to work closer and they wanted to go into Dutchess County to work in that office, they could. There's no boundaries. You don't have to live in the county that you work in. So if the courthouse is closer to you and the county next door to you, than it is the county you're in, you can apply to be an administrator for that in that particular county. So you would go to that courthouse. But again, we did try to go through numerous. We went to numerous counties trying to go get access into the courts to really push them. We knew we wouldn't be successful, but we pushed in to see what they would do, and that was quite some time ago, and we were really rejected all the way down the line, of course. And but we did worry them because there were phone calls being made to the other counties, and they were aware we were on the way, and so on and so forth. So they're not happy about it, and we knew we weren't going to get in that way anyway. But the only way we're going to get into this is to get to the other side of devolution, when all of these people are arrested and dealt with accordingly, according to law. And then that's what, as a matter of fact, that brings me to a point right now. Maybe I could talk a few minutes on this. We've done some papers where we filed with the United States Supreme Court, and we came in as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury with an indictment upon the federal judiciary. And we've been blocked. We've tried two times to go in there, and they blocked us twice. Yeah. So we haven't been able to get it before the Supreme Court. Well, I was getting ready to do it a third time, but I've been thinking maybe we should take a different direction here. So that's something I'm going to think about, and I'll talk more in the future. But the idea is this. Instead of doing the indictment on the federal judiciary and laying out all of the things that are problems within the federal court, we have 18 or 19 points or things that have to be changed to bring us back under the common law in the federal court districts. And but instead of going in from the standpoint of potentially like an indictment on them going to the United States Supreme Court for the issue, and they're part of the federal judiciary too, by the way. Nevertheless, I'm thinking of turning this paper and redoing it. It's pretty much written, but redoing it from the standpoint of actually suing directly the federal judiciary, which removes every federal judge from sitting on the seat that'll throw us out. That would push us into a couple of different directions. It could push us to the way, and we would permit this, I think, we'd try this out, it would push us to the way where the United States Supreme Court would have to sit in as the magistrate. Now, in a common law court, there is no judge, there's a magistrate. There is a tribunal of judges, and that's the 12 individuals that try the case. It's the jury. But that person that kind of orchestrates the court, that may be a judge in some courts, but in this court, they put on a magistrate cap, which means they can't make any real decisions. They can't make a decision on a case. They keep things moving along, and they shouldn't be restricting or restraining information from coming in, which is what they do often. So it would take us to a different direction. And if that's a problem, you know, we can go back into history and see that often the coroner or the sheriff would be the magistrate that would sit in on the court as the people would rule, and there would be no judges at all. So that's the way the common law process worked before, you know, we could, for, you know, America, you know, going back in early English days, you know, back in Britain. So there's a couple of ways that could happen. But I think that may be the way we need to go now. If we go that route, I don't want to file too early, though. I'd like to file close as I can to coming to the end of devolution, to the point when the military is about to move, or we think they're about to move, or after they have actually moved, because that gives us a more positive position and a way to get in opposed to. Because there's going to be some battles, and I don't know how they would battle us on that. Because suing the entire federal judiciary, who's going to step up and say, you can't do that? Who's going to step up and throw us out of court? I would think they would force it up to the United States Supreme Court, and then they'd have to deal with it. And the United States Supreme Court has been making some good decisions over the past two summers anyway. And, you know, we have Roe versus Wade was overturned. We had the Second Amendment decision that was made recently. So there's been a lot of good decisions that have come out recently, so there's something good going on up there. So we may have a better chance going that route, and that would get the attention of the United States Supreme Court to look at our paperwork and then figure out how they're going to deal with us. So I think that's the way we may go. But anyway, getting back to your question, you know, we're trying to train people. We're trying to get people who are serious. And it's a professional position. It's a career with benefits, and it's a job. And it's a very rewarding job.
Absolutely. And, you know, here's a question that I'm sure I would learn if I studied everything as well, but what do you do about...
Hey.
I have two of those. how does this work? Say you win a case within the common law court.
So hang on a second.
Sure.
Enough. What are you doing? Nobody there. Yeah, give me 1 second. I got to see if there's someone. Anybody want to pick up on that mic up there, Eric or Terry or somebody? I'll be back in a minute. Come on, enough.
I would if I knew what to say.
Yeah. I was just curious.
I'm like you. I learn every time. No. But what was your question?
Well, my question was, say you try a common law case. Well, how does that work with enforcement? Like, say, you know, you have your
sheriff.
You know, who the enforces the outcome?
The sheriff is the law enforcement, chief law enforcement county.
Okay.
Chief law enforcement officer of the county.
Mm-hmm.
All of our indictments in a common law grand jury would go to the sheriff for the sheriff to serve on people.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But as far as I know, not every sheriff is aware of their power. So
Right. That's why they wrote John wrote a sheriff's handbook.
Okay.
Kind of make them see that. And
okay.
And I want to emphasize a point that he made,
mm-hmm.
but maybe we didn't see it all. But, you know, he talked about common law grand juries being able to investigate something. Investigate, even if they think, well, as a common law grand jury, we are representing the people. We are a division of the people. So we as people, if we see something wrong, we have every right to go and find out about it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Sure, absolutely.
Go ahead.
You got it? Okay. No,
go ahead, John. I tried to fill in. I didn't do a good job.
Sounded okay.
Yeah, because the sheriff was, you know, the enforcement fell upon the sheriff. Because I was like, who enforces the court outcomes? You know,
totally the sheriff. The sheriff is the chief law enforcer. As a matter of fact, he's really the only law enforcer. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is a code enforcer. And when a police officer makes arrest, he's making a citizen's arrest. Really, the arrest is really fulfilled when they turn him over to the sheriff.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever heard of the guy, a fellow named Reiner Fulnick, who's been, he has organized the International Crimes Investigative Committee, and he's done, gathered investigators, and he's done a full investigation on, you know, COVID and the everything that went into it, and let's see, how can I articulate this, all of the fraud that occurred and, you know, the lies that occurred and everything like that. But he cannot find a court in the land to try his case. He's done a full case.
You know, if you can connect him with us, we'll talk to him about it and maybe we can work with him. That's a case we would definitely get involved to and file it in as long as he's got all of the proof. We can write the legal side of it. And again, you know, we'll probably go nowhere, okay, but it's not that it'll never go anywhere. Again, it's a building evidence, okay? We built a track record with evidence for the purpose of indicting the federal judiciary. So we have all of that prepared, and all we have to do is serve the indictment and come in and file the papers going up suing the federal judiciary for subversion against the United States of America. And we could do the same thing with that kind of an issue. That's something that is big. You know, we're looking for people who can do some research in different areas. I'd like to do things with food and water. Serious problem with food and even our water and our air. Serious problem. We've been poisoned all our life. This goes all the way back into the 40s and the 50s when they started really pressing poison. Sugar is a poison. They put it in everything, you know. High fructose corn syrup, eventually, that's a huge poison. And there's a lot of different things in our food that is not good for us.
Agreed.
A lot of problems. But it's people who, and there's also, you know, the medical field, the pharmaceuticals, major, major problem. So if we had people who had understanding of that and had done some research with that and could put the case together from the research perspective, we can put it together from the legal perspective.
Wow, I'm going to do a lot of connecting then, because I know a lot of people have done a lot of work in those areas that have been stalled, you know, are stalled with because of...
If you get anyone, just, you know, send the information to Jan.
Sure.
Jan will give you my phone number to be able to give to these people, and they can call me direct, and I can have a conversation with them and see where we go.
Right.
We'll get that to a Monday night meeting. We can talk right here live online.
Yeah. And you can find Reiner Fulnick and do any type of he is on Telegram, and you can find all of the information, all of their they have all of the interviews they've conducted with all kinds of whistleblowers within the whole pandemic. And
his main focus is on that pandemic, though, right?
100%. Yeah, and he's an attorney from through in America and in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But it's R-E-I-N-E-R with his name. R-E-I-N-E-R.
Make the connection. I don't have the time to go out and make the connections. That's why I ask everybody. You know, anybody can make a connection. Get the information, get it to Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org or send it an email. But Jan is the best place for that kind of information. And
all right.
You try to make the connection with me eventually with the individual or pass my phone number for the person to get to that individual or whatever.
Pardon me, does Martha have a connection to Reiner Fulnick?
I do not, not at all. No, I've just simply followed his case.
I'm interested in talking to him myself just so he knows what the common law is, because I don't think he knows what it is. And, you know, they're talking about Nuremberg 2.0, but no one knows that Nuremberg was, the first one was done in accord with the common law. So if they don't know that, then they're going in with a leg down. And so it'd be good if they knew that, and I yield.
Good point. But if you make connection with America, connect him with me eventually if he's interested.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking our friend Catherine out in California, she seems to know everybody, but she's been hard to get hold of the last time I tried. But anyway, I will definitely do that. If I can get a hold of him, I will certainly send him your way.
Wonderful.
Okay, anything else, Martha?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, appreciate the call. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to our next person. We have a couple people in the queue right now. Anybody else wants to get in the queue? Still have time. Walt from New York, you got the mic.
Yes, hello, John.
Yeah.
John, two things, real quick. When Ross calls, there's a lot of noise in the background, and you told him to mute it. That's good, but when he comes back on to speak to you, the noise is still there, so is there any way he could just shut off that radio equipment he's got when he comes on to speak to you? That's the first thing I wanted to ask him.
Yeah, well, I know he's in a room with his family, and so I'll talk with him about that.
The reason is because he does...
Anyway, if there's anything he could do. I know we've asked him a few times, but there is a situation there. And I know, you know, I can mute him from my end once I'm talking. But, yeah, on his end, when he's talking... you know, you get that background noise. The other thing he could do is to get a noise-canceling mic, and I know they work pretty well.
Yeah, because when he gives his questions, it's hard for me to hear what he's saying and what you're saying, too, with all that noise in the background. Okay, The second thing I want to ask you is, when you start the show every Monday night, you have Alexander Scorby with that beautiful New Testament narration there. I have a set too. I have a set of his 50 years old cassette tapes, and they're perfect. But one of them, somehow I gave it to someone a long time ago. They never returned it. And is there anywhere that sells those so I can replace that tape that I have that's missing from the New Testament?
Well, if you have that and you're just missing, a book or two, I can send you a copy. It would be electronic form.
But it wouldn't be a cassette tape, though?
It wouldn't be a cassette tape. No, it would be an MP3.
Now, I don't do computers, so what is an MP3? Is it like a CD or something?
Well, an MP3 could be put onto a CD, which could be played on a CD player, a CD-ROM. But an MP3 is just electronic, and when you double-click on it, if it's in your computer, for instance, here, look at. Let me go to the page where we have.
An MP3 is an audio format that's used quite often on the internet. So you can just have somebody take that MP3 and place it on a CD, like John's talking.
Okay, what I'll do is
a player of some kind that will work. If you have, you could buy an MP3 player, and they're very cheap, $30, $20. I mean, you could buy real cheap ones for $20. You could buy a more expensive one for $50. Or, a small little MP3 player. You stick it in your shirt pocket, and you could put unbelievable amount of stuff on there. You can download all kinds of MP3s. But what, do you have a smartphone?
No, I don't even have a smartphone. Everything I had is old-fashioned. But what I want to say is, but there's no place that sells original cassette tapes of Scorby?
Good question. I don't know.
All right. Okay.
Maybe while we're talking tonight, maybe someone can, search that out to see if someplace you can buy it. You might be able to buy it on Amazon.
Okay. What I'll do is, John, I'll try to call back next week, and I'll tell you which one's missing from one verse to the first part to the last part of the tape. And you said I could purchase something from you. You could send that to me.
I'd give you that. I mean, it's not that you're stealing or anything. I mean, of course, we want to pay, for the guy's work and stuff. But you're just filling in a gap that you're missing. You've already purchased it, so I don't see a problem with that.
Okay. All right. That's all I wanted to ask you, John. Thank you very much.
Hey, hold on a second before you run, my friend. I just looked it up on eBay, and here it is. Alexander Scorby KJV Complete Bible 48 Audio Cassettes for $59.99 on eBay right now.
Right, but thing is, all I need is the New Testament. That one tape is missing, so I just want to buy one if I could. Do they sell individual ones?
That's
awesome. I don't know. You could look it up though, but that's a good start.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I will get someone to help me with that. Thank you.
Yeah, and if you want just that one portion, I can give it to you. I don't think there's a problem with that. And okay.
All right.
Let me see.
All right. I'll try to talk next week. Thank you.
Let me see what this is. Okay, there is. You see, if you had a computer, there's all kinds of stuff. And if you decide to go, get a little more modern, so to speak, definitely you want to go with a computer and not a smartphone. I mean, look at, I can't believe people spend all the money they do on these smartphones, and they're so limited compared to a computer. Anyway, they're limited. And I would go, if you're going to invest that kind of money, you get a laptop. You could buy a used laptop for like $300, which is a great shape and everything, and that's pretty inexpensive. If you go up to, for instance, we have Bible reading on our website where you can go in and click on whatever book you want to get, and you can read, it should be reading here, I believe. It reads through it. Where is that button? Let me see. Okay, maybe it doesn't read. I'm pretty sure. I thought it did. Okay, commentary, okay, parallel Bibles. Well, this is pretty good. They got parallel Bibles. This is King James, so it's King James Version. But I guess it doesn't read it. So, you see what that does. Nope, doesn't do anything. Okay, anyway.
Hey, John, let me ask you this. Have you heard any talk about these quantum phones? Have you heard about this?
Never heard of a quantum phone. What are they saying about it?
Well, I heard a little bit of chatter on one of these Telegram channels the other day, and then today I saw this post from someone who looks like they were in our, and they just bring in random quotes or random posts from random folk into these channels. But it looked like it was someone from our court access course who was there. They have a very similar name if it's not the same person, but I think it's one of the ladies from Hawaii who made the post, but it was more than just writing. They showed. They visually showed. It's in the shape of a smartphone, but it's a clear piece of plastic. And when you touch it, it lights up. But you can see through it the whole time. And supposedly it's a new technology. And we're supposed to, you know, it's kind of like Nasara, Jasara. It's quantum financial system. It's all connected. You're going to have your money through this. You're going to be able to vote through this.
Yeah, we don't want any of that stuff anyway.
Yeah, but I mean,
I want gold and silver in my pocket, and I want to go down the block and lock it.
Yeah, but I mean, if they're gonna do some of the things they're talking about doing,
they're not gonna do any of them.
You don't think so?
Absolutely. They're going to jail.
Oh no! This is from the good people. This is supposed to get rid of
the good people. Then the good people are mixed up if they think that they need to go through that process with digital money and things of that nature, because that's what it sounds like. And the idea of voting through something for the convenience of your home and pushing a button, that's too easy to break into. We need paper ballots. We need people going down. And there's a lot of things. Look at, I'll tell you. I really feel strong about this. First of all, I believe, no doubt in my mind, that smartphones make people stupid. So they really, smartphones are a problem. And you give them to your children, you're destroying them. They're listening to a lot of psychopaths, sociopaths, because that's what dominates the whole thing to begin with. You get it's a stupid argument. You talk about stupid things, nothing really worthwhile. You're talking little tweets, and it just goes on and on and on. Now, smartphones have a place. I mean, look, I'm retired, so the smartphones became a big thing as I'm coming out of the business. But if I was in the business, I definitely would have a smartphone because I would use, it would be strategic to use it in work or walk around and do all kinds of things. You know, you would need that. Prior to that, I always carried a laptop. I'd go onto job sites and different things. I'd have a laptop with me, so if I had to get some information put in the computer or whatever, it's there. I'd record stuff. And I always also had a recorder, you know, so press a button and record a conversation so I could take notes later. So, you know, technology is great. I mean, I was in business before all this technology was there. But I really do believe you're killing your children by putting a smartphone in their hand. The things I see children do with this, it's horrible. And children, you know, they're learning how to be adults. And again, they're being influenced by other children who are, you know, growing sociopaths, or they seem to control everything and just to a major degree, and it's just destroying children. The children destroying children. I remember situations with my nephew. You know, he was kind of young and he had a smartphone, and I would just get on his case. You know, the things that they were doing. You know, have you no empathy? Come on, stop that. And you know, I got to him, but there's nobody with a lot of children that are doing that to stop these kids from destroying each other. So anyway, but even with people tweet, they don't even read a book anymore, you know, and you can't have a conversation worth anything. Because
I think it's going to be a different paradigm altogether, but I agree with you 100%. It's absolutely destroying people's brains. But let me ask you this. Let me shift gears here because we do have one more person in the chat, but I wanted to ask you, did you see the Nick Alvear recent documentary called The Greatest Show on Earth? Have you seen that yet?
No.
It takes Derek Johnson, his source material, and he makes a movie out. I'll send you the link.
Oh, definitely. I'd like to see that.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's really, really good, and it's new, and I highly recommend it for everybody. But, yeah, I'll send it to you, and I yield.
Okay. Yeah, you can drop it in my Skype.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that.
Okay, we'll take our next question, next person. Thanks, Walt. Take
Bye.
Our next person. Brett, you got the mic. Brett, what state are you from? Brett, you got the mic.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, yeah, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Yeah, so the question is, when arrested and you are held on a verbal charge, is that where a habeas corpus would work?
When you say being held on a verbal charge, define that a little better. I'm not sure I understand.
You're arrested, but there's nothing showing on any information to any public information to look up to see.
Well,
what,
if you're being arrested for something, they should be telling you what you're being arrested for, right? I mean, if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, look at the. There's a law in New York. They've been trying to get guns information from people who have weapons in New York, want to give it to the state. And the state legislators and the governor, who would then give that information to create a database by the state police. And they tried to do this. They tried to take it away from the sheriffs here in New York a couple of years back. And the sheriffs got together and just said no. Even though the legislators pushed forward and the governor pushed forward, the sheriffs finally, you know, did some really, I was surprised, you know, no, can't have it. So they collectively said no, so they couldn't get that information. At the time, there was a, when they were talking about it, someone asked a question up in Albany when they had a, you know, the news media up there talking about this and questioning the state police. There was a state police, I think it was a commissioner, I think that's what top level of the state police is, a commissioner. So if that was the case, so the commissioner of the state police was asked a question, well, if the governor gave you an order to take the guns away from the people, would you do it? He said, yep. So now we see the problem here and why they want it. So they passed a law recently, and the deadline just went by, that people, anybody who has a weapon needs to register it with New York. With New York State, and if they didn't do that, then they would be guilty of a misdemeanor and could be arrested. And a misdemeanor, you could do up to a year in jail, according to these people, which, again, is insanity. But here, being arrested for something like that, there is nobody to make an affidavit to write that you injured anybody. No one was injured. There is no injured party. And so, you know, how do they get a case against you if there's no injured party? You know, well, the police officer writes a paper that you got a gun, but what makes that illegal and who got injured? You know, where's the crime? Also, there's intent. You know, I have no intent of any criminal activity or criminal wrongdoing. Statutes don't apply to me. So, you know, again, but it's an uphill battle of those things. So if that's what you're talking about, you know, where they don't have an injured party and there's really no affidavit, there's nothing there.
Yeah, well, they don't disclose much, but if they say, well, you're being charged on XYZ, and then there's nothing, and you're being held to go in front of a judge, but yet you're not seeing anything pop up. There's no warrant. There's no any information out there. Can a person just be held?
Well, again, what kind of a courthouse is this? Is it a state court? Is it the county court? Is it a town court, a village court?
The detainment would be in a county public safety building, but...
That's not a court. That's administrative at best.
I'm sorry?
That's administrative at best. It's not a court per se, and they have no power to fine or incarcerate that kind of a court.
Okay, so is a habeas corpus would be used in a situation to release someone?
You have no clue on what it's about. You know, you should do a notice and demand to give information on what's going on. Are you the person that's being potentially served with something, or?
No, it was a relative of mine.
Well, first of all, they have to find out what this is about. I mean, some of these administrative courts think that they can demand you to come in and they can go through all this stuff and they can question you and you have to answer and all that. They don't have that power. Administrative systems, those type of administrative courts is for people who are underneath the equity part of the law, which means they're operating something commercially and that they have a certain amount of control over them, or that they work for some agency, a government agency, and they have some control over them. Other than that, you're one of the people, or they're one of the people, and they're not working for an agency, they're not working any commercial activity that they're being charged with something about, then it's nothing. They don't have the authority. But every court tries to take authority and hold on to it and won't let go. Every single one, even the administrative courts.
I see.
So, but we need more information. And I don't want to tell the person not to show up or something. They need to understand what's going on.
Right.
They make a decision on what they're doing. I don't even have a clue on what kind of a court system it is.
Right. Yeah, there's not much information that I was provided with either, and I'm just trying to figure this out.
Well, if you get any more information, bring it to me next week, and maybe we can think a little more on it.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to take our next caller. We have one other person in the queue. We're coming to the end anyway, so we've got 10 minutes. So who's that? Tim from Oregon. You got the mic. Tim from Oregon, you got the mic. I don't know if you're muted on your end, but you're unmuted on this end. 541 area code.
Lots of times it takes him a while to get that connected. He's usually out checking the cows, and he's running around in the thing, and his phone only has partial service. So I would vote... Yep, there you go. I hear you, Tim.
I guess you know Tim.
Oh, I thought you said Florida.
Nope, Tim from Oregon.
Oregon. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I lost connection with you out in the corral. I run out of battery. But during that talk on the public lands issues, and I thought there should be some correction or something there, there's very little public lands open for homesteading, and the reason is there are very little public lands. Back when my grandfather homesteaded, he homesteaded upon the public lands. They were those lands that did not have claims upon them. Today, if you go out there in at least the dry eastern Oregon country, and you go out and park on a spring and say, oh, I'm going to homestead this, nobody's here. Well, they homestead it, but they don't own the water because the water is already owned by the livestock people as a general rule. Mm-hmm. And so there's not much water out there available for homesteading.
Right, and it depends on where you're at. And again, there's a lot of, cattle areas out there, I guess, in Oregon also, right? A lot of cattle area?
Yeah.
And a lot of the land needs to be set aside for that purpose, to give us the beef and different things, food. But there are places, and I'm sure states, that have seized control of property, and we know the federal government has been a hog on this. All of the land that they seized control of, they made these great big parks, which, I can see the necessity for it. I can see the value for it. I can see the reason for it. But it shouldn't be controlled by the feds. It should be controlled by the state that the land is in. But I think sometimes they've taken way too much. They should open some of that land up and permit some homesteading. But I'm sure there are some ways,
It still comes back to there's not much available.
Right.
Because you go out there and find out who's out there and who has the rights and the rights of way. There's plenty of highway rights and water rights and right of ways for water and all that stuff that's out there and already been proved up on. As far as the livestock, that is not public grazing lands. There's no such thing as a privilege out on the public lands. Those lands were adjudicated way back in the 40s and for the Forest Service clear back in the 1910s, then those were removed from the public lands because the reason the BLM and the Forest Service was created is to send the government out there and to find out what they owned and what they did not own. And they had the... there was a filing fee for your yearly grazing, and at the end of the year, you could get that back.
I understand that when these cattle ranchers and stuff, they get the the rights for certain land to be able to graze and for the water and so on for, you know, their animals. But I understand that a lot of these people have had it for, you know, so hundreds of years or 100 years, let's say. And, you know, as long as they're using it and they're serving the public with it because they're bringing food, you know, that's good. I've never heard that it would expire at the end of the year. Are there places that are saying that it would expire at the end of the year, and what do they have to bid
out? Oh, no. No, there's no, unless they maybe granted a certain, for a small area or something, they granted you a grazing right, maybe to clean up some grass or something that was part of a public, a federal chunk of ground, you know, and maybe they let you in to clean that up.
And again, all this stuff really should go back to the states and not to the federal government.
Well, no. If you look in the now, I have not done this, but I'm sure it'll find out there. It's there. The Federalist Papers make it very plain. The states do not need to get control of these lands because they are lands that will. What they will do is turn them into parks, just like you said, and they'll be huge, huge parks, and they'll just become a conglomerate situation. And
I understand that sounds like it could be a problem, but I'm not familiar with anything in the Federalist Papers. I've been through the Federalist Papers a couple of times, and I'll be going through them again soon, and I'll pay attention to maybe something that I might have missed.
But one of the things, as far as the federal government, they've overstepped their bounds. The object of that was to get rid of those lands. And they got rid of the grazing rights in so much of the situations, and you know it's but then they, if someone dies and there's a big battle over the property, then they want to take it back and take the control of it. But the problem is, it comes right back to what you guys are teaching about the common law, and so many of these ranches are not privately, individually, I guess that would be the word, individually owned. They are owned by the family corporation, you know, and it's been handed down from generation to generation. And back when they didn't have no problem, who cared? But then when the BLM come in and the Forest Service come in and pretty quick got overbearing, why?
Problem, yeah.
There went problem.
Government could have had some control over this in the sense of requiring things. Because when an area becomes a state, you know, a state becomes a state, I don't know how all that was worked out. And even if the federal government was holding some property for some reason, for again having grazing rights, water rights for cattle ranches and different things, but at some point it needs to, in my opinion, it needs to go back to the state, because I don't know anywhere in the Constitution that gives them the power or the authority to own land, really. There's federal land for instance, Guam and Puerto Rico and different places, okay, and Philippines, all of that is territories. And now they've established themselves enough to become states if they wanted to be. They're under the rule of the United States, but they seem to have been blocked from that. I think Puerto Rico has been trying to become a state for a long time, but they're blocking that because they want to own that land and they want to use it for other purposes and other ideas. And again, you know, the federal government shouldn't have ownership of land. It belongs to the states. Now, yes, there could be a certain requirement for the purpose of people's needs, and they can require the state that they provide those for those needs, like grazing rights and so on. But I'm not educated enough to really think on those terms anyway. So, did we lose our caller?
No, sometimes he doesn't. Yeah, there he goes. Go ahead, Tim.
No, go ahead. Was you going to ask?
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, go ahead and ask a question if you want. No, I'm just here trying to help. Go ahead.
I want to close down in the next minute or two because I got a few things. I got to go get out of here. So, but go ahead, Tim, if you got a final thing. I don't have enough knowledge, but something needs
I just want to him.
Something needs to be done.
I recognize Tim. Yeah, I agree. That's how Storm Over Rangelands was written.
Mm-hmm.
Tim knew Wayne Hage, and Tim talked with this stuff about Wayne, talked with Wayne Hage about this very thing. And if you haven't read Storm Over Rangelands, you kind of don't understand the whole thing. Well, this is exactly what. This is exactly why Lavoie Finicum was killed. It's because he was pushing this.
I was just going to say, what I do know about these things that I learned from Lavoie Finicum with the videos he put out, which I think we have all his videos, or a lot of his videos up there, I think. But, my knowledge on this is minimum. But nevertheless,
yeah, but John, you're right. John, once the state becomes a state, the federal government has no business being in there for any reason whatsoever except for magazines, forts, and needful buildings. Other than that, constitutionally, they have no business being there.
Right.
If you study it very closely, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, I believe, and you read that closely, you will see the real problem is that they are stepping outside of their boundaries right there, and the definition of the boundaries, there's a lot of people have this idea the federal government can own 10 acres or 10 square miles and no more. That is bull. That's BS.
That's true.
Nothing in the Constitution that says that and stops them from owning that property. But Congress has limited what they could do and with that property, and one of them is to disperse it to the people. But what would you do if you was a congressman or a senator and you started looking at a say 500 or 600 acres or a ground or this ground or that ground and looked at all the property rights that are private property over the top, the overlay you might call it, of those lands, and you'll find it's pretty extensive. And where you can find a real deep understanding of it is Curtain versus, I believe it was Benson, 1910-1911, and the 2 years because of an appeal. And that will give you more insight to it than, with less output than anything.
Well, let me read the 17th in Section 8, okay? This is Clause 17. To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such a district, not exceeding 10 square miles, as made by concession... by cession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress become the seat of government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased, is pretty much what Eric said, purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Okay, so that is the extent. But again, you know, look at these are things I don't have enough knowledge on anyway, but I don't see the authority there for the federal government to have any. There's a lot of agencies they have that they don't have the authority to have, and the BLM is one of them.
Yes, and don't make the mistake that the judiciary writes law, because they don't. That's just something that's been incredibly perverted.
They think
at one point there that those court cases dealing with the BLM and the Forest Service belong in the state. They need to start with a common law grand jury and show up with an indictment then go right before the jury of the people and decide whether that's a right or a privilege.
Absolutely.
And it's already well established in law, and Curtain versus Benson will point that out, that those things, like especially the grazing issues, are a right, not a privilege.
Right. That's correct. I agree with that. All right, with that, we're going to end, though, because it's after 11 and I got to go. So, all right.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for the call, Tim. And Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday. And again, we have Bible studies on Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can get more information on that underneath Education Starts Here and click on our Bible study. So hopefully we'll see some there, too. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.